Hey everyone, Lisa Resnick here with Dandelion Inc. and podcast host of The Seed that you're listening to today. So today's guest is with Jessie Healy. She is the founder of many companies, one of which where I got connected to her is Webtopia. So please listen to her journey as a New Zealander that traveled and found her way to London and discovered that she was not happy with how things were being handled within the agencies that she worked for and decided to take the best practices that she knew needed to be incorporated and created her own and was very, very successful at it. So please listen in. If you like it, definitely share it, comment. Definitely want to hear your feedback. Welcome to The Seed. Cultivating growth and empowering women in business. Brought to you by Dandelion Inc. I'm your host, Lisa Resnick, and this podcast is all about connecting, developing, and supporting women in business. Join me as we explore tips and insights on leadership, business development, and social media strategies that can help you thrive. We'll also hear from amazing guests who share their stories and experiences, offering inspiration and practical advice for your entrepreneurial journey. So tune in, download, like, and subscribe. And remember, if you love what you hear, share it with others. Together, let's cultivate growth and empower women in business. Hey, everyone. I am here with Jessie Healy. She is an agency founder and e-commerce expert. Some of her claims to fame are Webtopia, Ecom Rockets, e-commerce impact. She advises e-commerce brands on how they can scale profitability through social media, advertising, Google ads, and email marketing. All the fun things that all of us are faced with these days that there is no hiding, no hiding. Not if you want to grow, there's no hiding from it. But on a personal note, and this is to everyone out there who is listening, I actually met Jessie, where she did not meet me, through a virtual email marketing course that she was hosting for another organization in London. So I woke my butt up at 3 a.m. in the morning because that call seemed so important. And thank goodness I did, because afterwards I emailed her. So anytime you're thinking, hey, this person's phenomenal, reach out because you never know. And then Jessie actually then did the same thing that she did for the London company for our company here at Dandelion Inc. in Ohio, which is pretty amazing. And she, unbeknownst to me, is not in London anymore, but in her hometown. Are you back in your hometown in New Zealand?
It's not actually my hometown. I chose a different town, but but I'm home in my home country. Yeah.
And you are all going to listen and hear Jessie tell her phenomenal story as she made her way from New Zealand to London, and everything just happened, right?
So much happened.
Yeah. So what was it? What was the spark that made you go from New Zealand to London?
New Zealand is probably one of the most isolated countries in the world. So I wouldn't say I was the first New Zealander to kind of just set off with my backpack and, you know, one-way ticket. It's kind of a rite of passage for us that we head off because, you know, New Zealand's super tiny and the nearest country is Australia, which is a 3-hour flight. And
oh, wow.
Australia is not that different culturally either. So, you know, you want to see the world, you go and you kind of go off and do the kind of work, what we call the working holiday thing. There's quite a good established visa program with the UK. So it was pretty easy to get a working visa to go there. I had friends there already. So I wasn't say I am an adventurous person, but it wasn't the hardest move in the world to go and set myself up in London. Yeah.
So you grabbed your backpack and you went to London, which, by the way, I think it's amazing because I'm dying to go to New Zealand. That is definitely one of my top five places that I want to go to.
Amazing.
And we've talked about this before. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law were just there for their honeymoon, which was not, they did have on their itinerary heading up where you are, but they ended up not being able to make it.
Oh
I know,
no.
I know.
It's a shame.
But I wish it was closer for us all to go to.
Yeah, right. So this is our challenge. We're stuck down way down here, so we have to, if we want to see the world, we have to go. And when I was 20, 23-ish when I left, the internet was definitely around, but not to the extent it is now. With I think there was YouTube, but maybe not the way it is. You couldn't just go and see the world from your phone the way you can now. So yeah, it was a little bit different. But yeah, I headed there actually via the US. I got like a job working in a ski resort in Colorado, so I did
No
that for a little
way.
bit. I did some travel around South America, so this was all kind of like one way, and then I eventually picked up my final flight through to London, landed in London with like literally I had £500 left by that point. Stayed on a friend's sofa and hit the kind of classified ads as it was at the time in the job sites, and got myself a job within a couple of days, so that was all sorted.
Did you start off in marketing?
Yeah, so I'd had some good advice by from a few people, again, like, because there's a lot of people do this kind of migration to London, and they'd said, get some experience before you go. Don't just go with no experience, because you won't have any contacts, you won't have a network, and so you should get some experience. So I did that. I worked for about a year out of uni, for this small company that actually, interestingly, did e-learning, which kind of come full circle because now that's what I do in a way.
Yes.
But they were one of the early e-learning companies. So I was doing marketing for them. I was learning at the time about Google advertising and email marketing, but I didn't really call it that. I was like just trying to get customers. So I had some a little bit of experience, and I guess I had digital marketing on my resume, which at that time in the mid-2000s was pretty hot property. So any recruiter that saw that would kind of like be wanting to talk to me. And so it kind of just went from there. I guess I got really lucky with, getting it in early on digital marketing.
Yes, you did, because it was around the mid 2000s when everything started to hit. And if you think about progression of time, just in general, about new trends, new waves, how fast digital marketing and content creation, all the things within that space has grown, is in immense, and we're not even close to where it can go.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's going to be an interesting ride over the next few years, I think, with AI and the way that's shaping like video and content. That's the thing to watch at the moment and the thing to keep your eye on. But that's what I love about this industry, is like there's always something to keep you on your toes. So I think that's why I've stayed in it so long, is there's always something new to learn. There's always some new trend, some new thing to pick up, and it just keeps you stimulated.
So, with that being said, so you're hanging out in London, which is a phenomenal place. I enjoy London a lot. Did you travel a lot while you were there?
I did, yeah. The good thing about the UK is they have pretty awesome like vacation allowances in your standard company. So I worked for various kind of tech startups and small, and then a bigger media company. But typically, I would always have 5 or 6 weeks of like paid holiday a year, and I would just spend every single moment of those days like out of the country, because the UK, I mean, actually, when I got older, I explored the UK a little bit more, but you were always like craving sun because it was never sunny in
Very true.
London. So you'd
You
get
should
these
come to Ohio
EasyJet
then.
flights. Yeah. You get these EasyJet flights, it would be like £100 return, and you could get to most cities in Europe for that. So I'd be going for long weekends with friends, or I'd be going for like a week-long holiday. So yeah, I explored Europe a ton while I was there. Even got over to the States a few times because flights were cheap there too. So yeah, it was an amazing, phenomenal base to like see the world.
And is that what helped prompt you to start your own business?
I would say no, not really. So what prompted me was, I guess, always throughout my career, I had experience of working with agencies, and I just kept getting frustrated over and over. It was always the same thing that would happen. They would talk a big talk, fancy people would come in and sell you their service, and then you'd get very junior people executing the work, and end up finding that actually my job inside the brand I'd be working for would be more about kind of telling the agency what to do anyway. And so then at what point is the agency really adding any value? So that was something I had seen, and I had it in the back of my mind all the time. Like, there's got to be another way. There's got to be something better. A particularly telling experience I had was when I was My second to last role before starting my business was I was head of performance marketing in Europe for Etsy. And I was responsible for like $1 million a budget per month. And we had an agency, giving them about 3% of our budget meant £32,000 per month for them that they were
Yes.
being given to service our account. It's a lot of money. And still the same thing happened. And we did so much due diligence to try and pick the right agency. They had all these smart people, and then they still, the lead strategist would ghost us, not come to meetings. The junior team kind of didn't really know much. And this was a good agency. And so this was kind of more and more sparking this thought, there's got to be a better way. And then I actually got laid off from that role, which was really sad because it felt like a dream job at the time. In hindsight, it probably wasn't a dream job, but I sort of felt like it was. I picked up another job really quickly that wasn't really a great, I mean, it was okay, but anyway, that company spectacularly, the guy who was running it, he had been really being dodgy with the money. He'd been spending it on private jets. It's a whole other story.
Oh,
Anyway, they went
wow.
un yeah, it was crazy. It was all in the Financial Times. We had Financial Times journalists like calling us up, but all the money went, and they called us into a room and said, "There's no money. We can't even pay you your last paycheck. There's no job. You're out." And I was 7 months pregnant at the time,
Of course.
so. Yeah, so twice in a row within a year, I'd lost my job, and I thought, you know what? Working for someone else isn't safe anymore. It isn't reliable. It isn't the safe route necessarily. So why don't I take the less safe route of going out on my own? And it was at that point just dipping my toe in the water, like seeing what was out there. And there'd always been that fear, like, how am I going to find work? Like, how do you? I know how to market products and brands,
Yes.
but I don't know how to market myself. So how will I find? How will I find work? But actually, it turned out, as soon as I put it out to my network and started talking to people, there was tons of companies that needed help from, people like me. And so that wasn't actually a problem. And I had my son, and I was kind of balancing freelancing, looking after him, like doing that whole thing. And I started to realize that there was a potential for me to launch an agency. And so when he was around one, I actually officially launched the agency and started hiring, and the rest is history.
That is pretty amazing. I have to ask though, because I do completely agree with you. There are a lot of times, and you see it out there, like the inbred marketing, like we're just going to give you the same templates in your industry across the board. And you see it on people's platforms. It's amazing to me that people are concerned about utilizing Canva for their graphics because other people are utilizing Canva for their graphics. But there's such a difference between the two. Because there's that authenticity of how you're utilizing Canva for what you're doing versus the one agency out there who's giving you the same template that they're giving 500 other companies in your
People,
same. Yes, and the only thing they've changed is the logo.
And that's
how
it. I think what we like, there's it's worth kind of thinking about. There's the button pushing side of things. There's the actual like putting the ads together, setting up the tracking. And to an extent, that part of the service is quite commodified now. Like, so you could get someone from, overseas to do it. You can get a
Yes.
freelancer to do it. As long as they follow the instructions, that side of things shouldn't be too expensive to fulfill. But the mistake people make is thinking that that's all they need. And actually, what really makes a difference to a campaign or to the success of your marketing is the strategy
A
that
hundred
sits
percent.
behind the execution. And I think that was where the agencies I was working with were falling flat, as they were just really providing execution. They were talking a lot about strategy in the sales pitch, but they hadn't figured out how to actually deliver that to their clients, like once they onboarded them. So we did a lot of work thinking about that. And like I would say, the bulk of the service at Webtopia is about the strategy, helping our clients to grow and figuring out what levers do they need to pull to grow. And then, yeah, we set it up for them and we execute it, but the execution becomes 20% of the work. And actually, most of the work is in the thinking and the strategy. And that's, I guess, why we're different and why we've been successful.
That's 100% accurate. And it's interesting. So my husband does communications. So that's his PR communications. That's how where he consults and he does the high level strategizing as well. And he was talking about he had a meeting and he's like, we're going to discuss their SWOT analysis. And I was like, so how long is your meeting going to be? And he's like, we're setting up for a couple of hours. And I said, that's good, because what I find, and I'm sure you'll agree, when you talk to people about their targets, when you're talking to people about how what their image is and what their SWOT analysis are, you'll get like that first, like, we'll just hit you up with the high level of what we think should be the response instead of the deep dive in. And that's really, if you don't have that foundation, the strategy is very difficult to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I always think the analogy of like when you're like painting and decorating a house, you think that the layer of paint is going to be the part that takes a long time, but it's actually the preparation work of like the sanding, the clearing out of the house, deciding the colors in the first place. And then when you finally put the paint on, that takes the last hour. So it's the foundational work that you do to like to set things up for success that is important. Yeah.
100%. So when you started Webtopia and you got that great response, at what point in time were you like, hey, I might need to bring on some other people?
Yeah, so that was quite, I mean, I guess it was an evolution that happened from freelancer to agency owner. So in the early days of freelancing, you know, within probably 6 months, I started getting some people to help me with little bits and pieces, you know, with stuff that was more repeatable, stuff that I would find kind of boring to keep doing day in, day out. So I started with freelancers. It was a little bit mixed in terms of how helpful it was. Sometimes, you know, you find you have to check someone's work as much as it takes you as long as it would take to do it. So I was definitely learning at that point, like what kind of help I needed and how to structure it. And then it was about, yeah, I guess once I like officially launched, I'm an agency and I'm gonna do this, I decided it was time to have a full-time employee, someone who I could rely on, you know, 40 hours a week, who would be there to kind of really service my clients so that I could keep growing. So it was quite early on that I took her on. And then this was now, we're talking, I think I signed her contract in like February 2020. So that fateful, yes, that fateful time of in history, which we'll never forget. And so it was initially a scary time because our clients, you know, first of all, there was all these wobbles of should they turn ads off? Will they be allowed to continue to operate? Will e-commerce continue or will the warehouses be shut down? So we just really didn't know. But once the government was official and e-commerce will continue, e-commerce is necessary to keep going, things just blew up. So from that point on, my agency was just go, go, go. Because we were so focused on a sector that was absolutely blowing up during the pandemic. And I thought to myself, well, I'm stuck inside the whole time anyway. I'm just going to lean into this business. And we just really hit the pedal. We were hiring pretty much every month a new person. We were taking on new clients, you know, pretty much every week. And it was all about building the systems behind the machine to make sure we could deliver on our promises to those clients and get them the results that, you know, that they deserved. So yeah, it was a crazy time.
Can you believe it's only 4 years later?
I know. So wild.
It
So
is
much
wild.
feels crazy. Yeah, it feels like a million years ago in some ways, and it feels like yesterday as well. It's so strange.
I think about some of my friends that started their own e-commerce businesses during that time. And they
Yeah.
started off, it's like before you had the traditional, you start off with the brick and mortar. And then you start incorporating e-commerce and the click and order, and they completely reversed it. So I think it's really interesting, as horrible of a time it was, there were a lot of great things that were learned and achieved throughout that time as well.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, for us, like, yeah, I would never wish it to happen, and I wish we could erase the fact that it happened. But in terms of my business, like, you know, you've got to make hay while the sun shines. And one of the great things about it for us was that people understood more easily the model that I was doing, which was a remote business. So in sort of 2019, when I was launching this and telling clients that we were a remote team, we don't have a physical office, there was resistance to that. And a lot of clients would insist on having, you know, our first meeting or having regular meetings in person. So we were kind of limited to like the London area. My first employee was based in London. But once the pandemic hit, people sort of started to learn how to use Zoom. They realized they could collaborate over Zoom, that, you didn't have to meet in person. And so that model that we had of hiring internationally, hiring the best people no matter where they are, giving them a flexible, work-life balance,
Yes.
all of that just made much more sense. And we've never had anyone really question it since then. Of course, since the pandemic's ended, now with, we do try and meet our clients maybe once a year, go and pay them a visit, get to know them. But it's not an essential part of, the business model to have to be, to have everyone kind of be down the road and available to meet regularly.
Well, no, but you could do what we're doing right now. We're right now recording a podcast. You're not in my podcast studio. We're doing this virtually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just as good. So,
Totally.
yeah, so you're able to still make the connections and everything, doing it. Well, we won't even get into Zoom and Teams and all those other platforms that probably like soared beyond belief during that time as
Yeah.
well. But
Yeah,
they,
it's funny when I have an in-person meeting now in my town, I'm like, oh no, I don't have an AI recording the notes for me, and like I have to wear like nice trousers. Like it's a whole different thing. Like I had to really readjust to like, the energy of a in-person meeting is different. But I
is.
think there's a place for both of them, right?
I 100% agree with that. So with you just mentioned AI, I've also had those conversations with people that are in the digital space that were very concerned when AI started to disseminate to everyone, and make it's so accessible. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Like when you mentioned like being able to knock out or somebody else doing the things that you didn't like to do. I mean, I 100% lean in with AI when it comes to that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited about AI. I think if you dwell on stuff too much and like think of all the crazy consequences, like in terms of we probably don't have time today to go into like the potential societal consequences
Oh,
of
I know
it
the
in terms of,
chatbots.
yeah, or like even just the fact of the way misinformation will be able to spread. That's a little scary to me.
Yes.
But I think for us in the creative realm of like creating ads, it just makes it more fun because the boring part of like analyzing all of your thousands of reviews, for instance, you can now get AI to do that, get incredible insights, and then move on with the task, the fun task of coming up with your ad angles. It can just make things just quicker to do and more efficient. And so I think, we've been seeing these trends for years of efficiency of technology coming in, and it's just another wave. It's probably one of the biggest, most profound waves that we'll see in our lifetime, I think, over the next couple of years. But as long as we as individuals, keep learning how to use them and upskilling ourselves, then it presents for me, I think, more of an opportunity than a threat, personally.
I agree completely. I look at it as more of an opportunity than a threat as well. But
Yeah.
we're also more of the strategizing minds. I like to
Yeah.
think that, and which it's like, how do we incorporate this?
Yeah.
How do we make this scale and go even bigger than what we're already doing?
Yeah.
So
Totally.
at what point in time, because this was something I found out the last time that we spoke, that Webtopia got acquired.
It did, yeah. So this was 9 months ago now that we officially signed the legal papers and I handed it over to the new owners. So I launched the agency. So it was around 6 years old, no, 5 years old when I sold it. So what happened was as we talked about, it grew in the pandemic and
Yes.
it was amazing. We got to a team of 20 and we were doing really well and everything was great. And I'd had a long-term plan to move my family home to New Zealand. And there I was in London, and that was the reason why I'd started it as a remote business. But I hadn't expected it to grow so fast and so big and to have such a big team. Well, it's compared to some businesses, it's tiny, but for me it was bigger than I
Yes.
expected, right? But I'm the kind of person where I'm like, I'm not going to change my plan. My plan is to move home to New Zealand and have my son have his childhood here. And so that was the plan and I was sticking to it. So I moved, and what I hadn't really factored in, I think, was firstly, maybe my business wasn't quite mature enough to be run so remotely with with the CEO being completely unavailable during the workday. So the time difference for everyone's reference is that Literally, the 8 hours that the UK is awake and working is the 8 hours when a normal person is asleep. So
Yes.
the 12-hour time difference, which means that just as my team would be starting for their day, I would be going to bed. And then by the time I woke up, they'd be finished for the day. So terrible, terrible time difference. And what I thought I had a leadership team. I thought they can kind of run the business and I'll have meetings with them in the evening, and that'll be fine. What I hadn't factored in was working in the evening. I'm okay with that, but then what was happening is I couldn't sleep afterwards. Like I would just be switched on after the meeting. Everything's firing. Take me hours to wind down. So I wasn't going to bed until, I wasn't falling asleep until 2 in the morning. And then I was having to get up and be a mom and all of that stuff. And no matter which way I tried it, no matter which way I kind of what I did, I couldn't change that fact. It just seemed to be biologically how I'm built. If I do meetings and go on Zoom and talk to my team, I'm not going to sleep. So that was really, really challenging, far more challenging than I thought. And then our industry hit some like challenging times. Like it's doing much better now, but as the pandemic ended, people started spending their money on vacations. They started spending their money on going out for dinner, and they weren't at home shopping quite as much. We'd had all these e-com businesses spring up, in the pandemic, and some of them really honestly weren't going to survive post-pandemic. So that was happening. A lot of businesses were not surviving. In the meantime, there'd been all these agencies that had sprung up. So suddenly it was much more competitive to hold on to the clients that you had and to win new clients. And results weren't as good. And so you had a lot more explaining to do as an agency about why your results weren't as good. So that was going on. And then into that mix was thrown data privacy changes from Apple. So the iOS 14 update happened.
Yes.
This meant that Facebook ads suddenly just didn't work as well as they had. It was a very
Yes.
confusing time. Clients were distrustful. Was it the agency's fault? Was it the fault of, was it because their business was a pandemic business? So it was really hard to tell.
Is it the algorithm?
Is it the algorithm? Is it the agency? Or is it my business isn't suited to post-COVID? So there was a lot going on, and that made it made it very challenging to run a business. If I'd been in London, I could have kind of rolled my sleeves up, got with my team and, workshopped it all and figured it all out. But at 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, I was only really able to just get an update for them and give them a few more instructions. And it was just super challenging. So I realized that I had to get out. And so I started looking around for buyers. And luckily, I'm a part of an amazing network of shout out Andrew Foxwell, who's someone who has been a real mentor to me. And he has an amazing network of agency owners. And he introduced me to someone who introduced me to someone else who introduced me ultimately to the buyer. So I didn't, in this case, use a broker. I just went direct with the buyer. And then we got lawyers and we kind of negotiated that way. And it was a really great fit. He has a similar sized agency based out of Ireland. So he was on the right time zone. He had some really great big clients in the US, and we weren't so well penetrated in the US. So it was a match made in heaven. And we worked it all out, and he bought the agency. And I was able to continue to do what I do now, which is I'd already kind of started this on the side, run my coaching program, which is for earlier stage e-com brands and helping them to grow. And I have a great relationship with the agency, where clients that aren't quite ready for the agency, they come to me instead. And it's worked out amazingly well.
Now you're still with Webtopia, right?
Yeah, so I'm still CMO for Webtopia. So that's like a part-time role that I'm doing for them, where I'm supporting them in kind of raising the brand profile, putting out content about the industry, running my podcast, the newsletter, all of that stuff I do for them still, and kind of advising the CEO on, anything he wants me to advise him on, given that I know the team pretty well and the clients that are now his clients. So yeah.
That is pretty amazing. How's it feel though when you, because this was your baby?
Yeah, it was surprisingly easy because I think I was just ready, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't, if it wasn't for the time difference, I probably wouldn't have done it so soon, but I couldn't just keep getting on those late night Zoom calls. I knew that your health and wellness is so important. And I knew that it was damaging my body and it was
Yeah.
damaging, it was meaning I wasn't able to be a good mom and a good partner and a good friend because I was just so damn tired all the time. And something had to change. And you just kind of realize. And I remember it was about the similar time that our Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, she stepped down. She quit after having had an intense time leading the country through a pandemic. And it was kind of for similar reasons, I think. She was just like, I've done this thing. It's amazing. I want to leave on a high. I don't want to keep going and burn myself out completely. So, yeah, I'm proud that I made that decision because I could have kept going. I'm a strong person. I could have just kept pushing, but it wasn't the right personal decision for me.
What's interesting about that is when we start businesses, they always say to us, besides creating our business plans, is that we should also create our exit plans of knowing that time that we're going to pass the reins, if you will. Because it's not closing shop, it's passing the reins is what ultimately really what we want to do. But that's also the part of the planning that we opt not to do. But there always comes a point in time where you just know internally, like when you're weighing things and it's you still love your baby, but you also love your baby at home and you need to create that balance and you're still doing everything that you're loving to do at the same time.
I think like the baby analogy is kind of interesting because if you're a parent and you build a good and you are a good parent, you build a child that can walk on their own and then ultimately make decisions on their own and be like a self-sufficient human. And like that's the kind of business that everyone should build, regardless of whether they're planning to exit soon or not. You want a business that more or less can run itself and that has can that you're not the total integral part of it. Because if you're the integral part of it, then you're not really an entrepreneur. You just have a really tough job. And so I always built my business in that way. I read some really amazing books. The E-Myth is one, Clockwork is another, kind of famous books about how you set up systems in your business so that whatever it is that you're amazing at becomes systematized so that it's not always coming back to you as the founder to kind of fix every problem and save every situation. So I always built my business with that in mind. And actually, the fact that I even could move to New Zealand proves that I had done that. And I think that did make the sale easier. I'd be able to say to the buyer, well, of course I'm not pivotal to this business because I'm not even awake when the business is running. So that argument was really strong. And so that made the sale like easy because we were able to say, this is a working business. We can hand it over to you. And it just needed someone to like to lead the you know to take the reins really and lead it. So
So tell us about the coaching a little bit more.
So I started this again. I actually started this in 2020, like dipped my toe in the water of like teaching people how to do the stuff for themselves versus having an agency do it for you. So I launched a Facebook ad course, like nothing original in 2020, and I actually had a really good uptake. And from that, I kind of got to know what it was like to teach people this stuff, started to understand what people needed and where they needed help. And over time, I kind of, and on the side of running the agency, I was kind of developing the content and developing the materials. And I had like a few students, like a handful of students who were kind of with me throughout that as I was developing it. And so when I exited the agency, I was able to kind of go full into that and kind of launch it properly. So we now have 25 brands in there. We sort of call it like an accelerator. So I teach not just Facebook ads at all. And actually, in a way, we're moving away from teaching the nitty-gritty technical stuff to actually back to that. It's the strategy that's important, right? Like anyone can push the buttons, but what's the strategy behind that button pushing? So we support brands in their email strategy, their Google ad strategy, and their paid ads on Meta, Instagram and Facebook, and also just overall in their kind of growing their business and supporting them in that way. So it's really fun, and I really enjoy working with these early stage founders because I love the energy of them.
So I have to ask time zone wise, are a lot of the brands a little bit easier with the time? Because even if you think about it right now, so I'm in Ohio, it is 5 o'clock here. It's on Thursday. Let me be accurate about the day because it's Friday, right?
It's Friday for me. So I have to do my calls between Tuesday and my Friday, which is which is Monday and Thursday for you guys. But yeah, so yeah, I have a set schedule of like timed calls. So I do one that's at 8 a.m. on a Thursday for me, which is kind of afternoon for the most of the US, and that is the evening for the UK people. But one evening meeting a week for them to come and learn and grow their business is not as hard as, you know, every night of the week with your team doing it over and over. So I think, you know,
100%.
and that recorded, they can jump on. But I also have a couple of the coaches are people from the Webtopia team, and they coach in the morning in the UK. So people who are more morning people, we can support them through that. So I've just got a few coaches that kind of help support the different time zones. But I do my calls crucially at a time of day that when I'm feeling the
Yes.
best. So that's important.
I do really love that you put your body and your mind above everything else, because if you lose that, then it doesn't even matter anything else that you have, because those won't be as good either.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, my brain just stops working if I don't get 7 hours sleep. Like, just one night of
Agreed.
not enough sleep, it's just, I turn to custard. So,
I
yeah.
completely agree. I don't know how people live off of 4 or 5 hours of sleep at night. I don't. Like I enjoy my sleep. I need
Yeah, me too.
it.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. And I do have one more question before we go. For all those people that are listening, if they are starting their own businesses, if they are starting their own businesses in the digital field, all of that, what advice do you have to give them?
That's a really great question. So I would say, I guess the main piece of advice I would say is like commit to the learning journey, right? So you're going to always be having to learn, and you can't outsource that. Like, you can't outsource understanding how digital channels work if you want to be a business in this space. Sure, you can find a great agency, find a great freelancer if you're lucky, but the process of finding them usually involves you understanding enough. So if you commit to listening to the podcast, watching the trainings, you know, investing in some training in your niche, you know, in your specific area, and understand that entrepreneurship really is a continual learning journey, I think you'll go far.
That's perfect advice. Thank you. I am going to let you get back to your day and then enjoy your weekend. And
You.
mine starts tomorrow.
Yeah. Have a great Thursday evening and enjoy your Friday.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you everyone for listening in to The Seed. If you'd like to receive our weekly newsletter, go to dandelion-inc.com and click Let's Connect. And please be sure to subscribe to The Seeds podcast to hear more inspiring stories from other badass women that are all around us. Remember, behind every woman is a tribe of other successful women who have their back. To you all, thank you.